Hey friends, before we begin, I want to let you know about an event I'm doing next month. Sonos Radio is a programming partner of On Air Fest 2021, a virtual rendition of the Storytelling and Podcast Festival. I'll be doing live tapings of Object of Sound with musician Rhiannon Giddens on April 9th and Rishikesh Hirway of Song Exploder on April 10th. If you're loving the show and want an inside look, you can register for free at 2021.onairfest.com. See you there. You're listening to Object of Sound from Sonos, the show where we bring you in tune with the music that shapes our culture. When music lives in the air, it's one thing, but when you know the undercurrents and the ideas that went into a song, and when you can feel its weight, it becomes more meaningful. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, a poet and culture critic, and I'll be your guide as we seek a deeper way of listening. A major feature of Soul Train was the Soul Train line. It was simple on its face. Two lines are formed and two dancers peel off from the end of the line and dance their way to the opposite end until the line naturally dwindles.
Soul Train, the hippest trip in America.
Showing off their best moves as if they might forget how to do them at any moment. The people on the ends beating out a percussion with their open palms. The hand and the voice and the body, the sweetest instruments, the instruments from which all other instruments are born. Cisco Kid was a friend
of mine. Here we go with the Soul Train line, and it's Earth, Wind, and Fire, and one they call Happy Feeling.
The line was an instant hit because it afforded each person their own time to shine. There were dancers who returned multiple times, and watching reruns, I was always delighted to see them reappear in the line a few weeks in a row. But I was never as happy as I was watching a new person in the line for their first time, which could sometimes be given away with an excess of flourish or an even greater urgency spilling forth from their movements. Someone who savored their time in the line, maybe twirling sideways for a bit in order to milk just a few more seconds before finishing their turn. Someone who maybe heard stories of the line's mythology and made a pilgrimage to see it for themselves. Folks who had become stars of the 70s, 80s, and 90s first had their big on-camera moments twisting and twirling within the wall of clapping hands. I consider often the difference between showing off and showing out. How showing off is something you do for the world at large, and showing out is something you do strictly for your people. The people who might not need to be reminded how good you are, but will take the reminder when they can. The Soul Train line was the gold standard of where one goes to show out. That was an excerpt from my new book, A Little Devil in America, Notes in Praise of Black Performance, which comes out on Tuesday, March 30th. The book is about various modes of black performance throughout U.S. history, spanning minstrel shows to playing cards to the art of mourning and the funeral. While working on the book, I watched nearly every episode of Soul Train from the early 70s through the late 80s, which was fascinating because it was also witnessing a clear arc of black life as told through these episodes. Things that shifted in small ways, like fashion and dance moves, and then seeing the shifts in performances and performers. For example, seeing Chaka Khan as a member of Rufus and then seeing Chaka Khan as a solo artist, or seeing Jody Watley dance in the Soul Train line and then seeing Jody Watley have a song played in the Soul Train line. It created this kind of ever-changing familial bubble that was all guided by the show's host, Don Cornelius, who was so generous with his vision for Black people in their living. And when I was thinking about this book as a way to celebrate a history of Black movement, I wanted to open it with Soul Train, because for me, coming up, Soul Train was the pinnacle of Black movement. It was the place that I knew as a kid where Black people went to dance, to show off, to show out. This week, I'm going to talk to Erica Blount-Danois, who is a Baltimore-based journalist and author of Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show. So we'll talk about not just our favorite dancers and moments from the show, but also the enduring legacy of Soul Train and how it created a blueprint for the all-Black media empires to come, and a generation of artists who got their start in the line, the Soul Train line, and then evolved into some of the more significant artists of the 80s and early 90s, and who are still with us now. And then I made a playlist of songs that made up my favorite Soul Train line moments. And so you'll hear songs from Jody Watley, you'll hear songs from Zapp, and from the Mighty OJs from Ohio. You can hear that at mixcloud.com/Sonos, and we'll also leave the link to it in the show notes. To close the show, I'll read another small excerpt from A Little Devil in America. Erica, how are you? Thank you for hanging with me.
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Hanif. It's good to see you.
I love your work around Soul Train. And as someone who got very deeply immersed in Soul Train for the past couple years, I was wondering if you had a favorite era, if you had a favorite run of years of Soul Train.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad to hear that you are fully immersed in it. That's always exciting. I'd say the 70s. I mean, you know, it was a 70s period for music, for fashion, for dances, for everything.
So when working on this book, I got a hard drive that had every episode from the 70s through the 80s. And so, you know, coming up, I only saw reruns. They would play them on Sundays on WGN here in the Midwest. And so I would watch reruns, but they'd be like, you know, kind of haphazardly arranged. Sometimes you get an episode from 88 and sometimes you get one from 72. And to have this kind of chronological experience of watching them, mm-hmm. I went into it for the lines, but something that fascinated me so much was the kind of musician interviews that would happen, where the musicians would be kind of just like right there in the crowd.
Okay, we're back with the OJs. I'm going to turn the questioning over to the Soul Train gang.
I'd like to know what specific incident inspired you to write Backstabbers.
Well, I wish it had inspired me, but
I can't imagine happening now.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Imagine Beyonce just surrounded by regular teenagers around her on a dance floor. Like, it doesn't happen. Yeah. Like, imagine being a teenager, you know, getting a chance to dance in the show and being able to meet artists, you know?
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could talk a bit, because Soul Train to me also feels like a kind of a cavern of trust, you know, where there's this immense trust between both, you know, the performers and musicians trusted Don Cornelius, but they also, through that, trusted the audience. You know, like, I saw the Sly Stone episodes where he's just alone in the crowd without Don Cornelius with a microphone just talking to anyone.
All right. We're going to have questions and answers.
So. Oh, my name's Paula, and I want to know who designed your outfit? Because it looks so good on you.
Now, let me ask.
Nudie.
Yeah. I'd like to know, my name is Denise, and I'd like to know when you're going to come back to L.A. and do a concert.
Later on night.
Tonight?
And this is like Sly Stone at the height of his powers, you know, when he trusts that these people aren't going to tear his clothes off or whatever. Yeah. I've been thinking about that.
Yeah, no, I don't have an answer for that either. I think that, you know, Don Cornelius had this presence that I think, you know, people just respected him. If he said on the set that this is what's going to happen and the dancers are going to do this and the artists are going to do this, I think everybody just listened. But I also think the time period was very different in that artists were very much a part of the community. Artists came from the community, from, you know, storefront churches and, you know, like they were groomed in particular, like for Soul Train, you know, the dancers were groomed at the rec center. The singers came from, you know, the community that ended up being in the audience. So there weren't the same kind of boundaries that we have today. And you know, the gatekeepers and the level of public relations people who are cultivating what their reputations are. They were really just like us, but with this tremendous talent. And so I think that was part of why that happened. And then they were all artists in a sense. You know, Don Cornelius was an artist in that he had this vision for this show. The dancers were artists. You know, you think about the Lockers and the incredible dancers that really made the show. And then the artists, obviously, were musicians, were, you know, amazing, amazing talents.
I think that's the interesting thing that you just hit on about how there was kind of this democratization of the space because everyone in it was an artist of some sort. And it created, sometimes it created this like dancer to musician pipeline,
right,
which I'm so fascinated by, you know, and particularly because, you know, Jermaine Stewart is a Columbus guy. You know, Jermaine Stewart's from the east side of Columbus where I was born and came up. And I think about someone like Jody Watley, who I knew first as a solo artist, you know, like coming up, I came up in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so she was huge.
Right.
And then I kind of worked backwards. And it's like, oh, she was in Shalimar. And then I worked even more backwards. And it's like, oh, wait. Her and Jeffrey Daniel were in the Soul Train lines.
I mean, that's amazing. Yeah. And that Don Cornelius also had created this record label for such a thing. So, you know, Jody Watley and Howard Hewitt and Shalimar, they started out as dancers, became singers, and had a record label immediately from being on Soul Train to sign on to. You know, like that doesn't happen where it's, you know, all of these things are sort of synchronized in today's world. Like, you know, this Don Cornelius gave a platform for so many kind of artists. Even the fashion on the show, you know, some of the dancers actually went on to be fashion designers.
Right.
So, I mean, it was just this, like, Harlem Renaissance inside of a studio.
I want to talk a little bit about Don Cornelius. You know, he's someone who I thought was like a mythological figure growing up. Because being a kid and watching the Soul Train reruns, it's like this deep voice seems very, like, cooler than anyone.
Right.
All of that happened. A great welcome, gang, for Miss Diana Ross.
Thank you.
I'm about to lose my most prized possession, y'all, which is my cool.
Absolutely smoother than any. And I feel like I grew up around a lot of cool black folks, but he was, like, triple times cooler than any, like the coolest black motherfucker I knew. And I feel like he is someone who sometimes gets talked about as kind of a vessel for what Soul Train was, but he was also just like the actual machinery of the show revolved around his ability to keep people engaged and to be as cool as he was.
Right. And effortlessly.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about the Blaxploitation era and all of those cool black men that came out of that, when I think about Don Cornelius, that's who I think about. I think he's also a calming figure, you know, like he put these artists at ease, you know, he had this deep voice. He was sort of like a father figure in some ways, you know, like this commanding voice. And then he's, you know, he's over 6 feet. He's running this show. He's hiring black folks. He's hiring not just black men, black women. He's got all the dancers, the best dancers in the area. He has the best artists on the show, you know, initially all black artists, but then people like Elton John were calling him to be on the show. It wasn't just his physical presence. It was also his intellectual presence to be able to not only create this show from scratch and to see it grow, but then to add all of these other elements from, you know, he owned the show to, you know, having sponsorship that was black owned to, like I said, the record label. He had a Soul Train nightclub. Like, his vision to keep going is like, I don't know, I can only compare it to like our hip hop artists now and the way that they are owning and creating on their own. But he was way ahead of his time.
The advertisements, because when I watched them, when I got all those, all those shows, the commercials were like built in already. And so the advertisements blew my mind because like watching the reruns, you just get whatever commercials are running in 1996 or whatever. But to see all of the Johnson products in every commercial, all the Afro Sheen commercials, the one, there's one where there's like Frederick Douglass.
Yes.
Have you seen that one?
It's hilarious.
Hey, aren't you Frederick Douglass?
Are you going to go out into the world with your hair looking like that?
Well, Mr. Douglass, you know, times have changed. We wear the natural now.
You call that a natural? That's a mess. So haven't you forgotten?
Right. My Afro-Sheen comb easy and hairspray for Sheen. You know, I can dig this getting my fro together.
My sentiments, almost exactly.
I could not believe that was real. I was like, what? This seems like something someone would make as a joke like today, you know, as a Twitter joke or something.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up a clip that we could watch, the legendary clip of Cornelius taken to the line with Mary, the late, great Mary Wilson. Mm. And it's such a great moment for me because it, you know, it clearly doesn't seem to want to, you know, like in the interview phase when she's like, dance with me, Don. He's like, clearly like, I don't know, this isn't it. But then we get him in the line and he's so enthusiastic.
Dance with Don. That's the new thing. Okay, Don, can I dance with you?
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, this is when Mary Wilson convinced Don, who was refuses to dance normally. She convinced him.
And he's so reluctant.
Yeah.
But not on television.
Not on television, huh? Okay. No. All right, it's a date.
No, sure, you can dance anywhere you like, Mary. You think I could come up that Soul Train line?
He had never danced in the line before, I believe this.
Never. Yep.
All righty, here we go with the JBs. Fred Wesley and the JBs and doing it.
He looks incredible.
What is that, a velvet black blazer and a polka dot butterfly collar? I love it.
You know, he's like not a great dancer, but he's good enough, which I think I like about him.
Yeah, like he managed to get down a Soul Train line, which is not easy. It's not easy to dance and walk at the same time.
No, I could not probably get down a Soul Train line. One thing about these eras is they shifted where a big thing was not just the style of fashion, but the colors shifted. And so the 70s, you had a lot of like burgundies and orange. And I feel like the line formation is a little looser in the 70s. Like more people start coming down a little earlier.
Mm-hmm. And the outfits, you can, stacks, I mean, just, the shoes, the polyester, all of those things. The bell bottoms, which all of these styles have returned, you know?
They have. Yeah. You won't catch me in bell bottoms, but they are there. And every afro, like never a hair out of place, which is something that I didn't appreciate until I watched these shows. And people are like aggressively dancing during some of these, you know, like depending on who the performer was and what's happening. It's like, man, were y'all touching up the hair in between, you know?
The hair and the stacks, the shoes. Like the high heels, how can you dance in those? And, you know, maintain.
Shoes, yeah.
I don't know.
He was feeling himself a little more his second time through.
I think so too.
There he goes.
and then it all goes awry.
Yeah. For those who didn't see it, he tries to hit a split. And it does not go well, which, I mean, I don't know if he tried to hit a split in a way that suggested he'd maybe never done it before. Like, he was just, like, propelled by the excitement of the moment.
Right.
I feel like we've all been there. We've all, like, been dancing. It's like, I can do this move. And then we can absolutely not do that move.
Yeah.
Do you have favorite dancers?
Just going to say, it's funny that we keep going back to the dancers. Like, they really made the show.
They're stars of the show.
Yeah. Oh, let me think. So definitely Jody and Jeffrey, the Asian dancer, Cheryl Song. So, you know, we thought we could dance much better than her. That was our whole thing at home. But it ended up like she became, you know, she danced for Michael Jackson. And yeah, like she became a real star from that show.
Incredible.
Oh, definitely The Lockers. So Rerun.
The Locker, yeah.
The Lockers were amazing. Demita Jo Freeman, also amazing. And she's still dancing. She choreographed
some ballets, I believe.
I know,
dancing for real.
Yeah. She's a classical ballerina. Like, she was trained as a, so she danced for, like, the Queen of England. Like, she's done everything. Like, she's amazing.
Lastly, you know, the show's ending was so different for me than like what I knew it as, you know,
as these things go.
You know, as time passed and, you know, Don wasn't well and all of these things.
Yeah.
What do you think the show's legacy is going into this new era?
I mean, I think the legacy is huge. You know, Don Cornelius himself as the host, you know, the legacy of his ownership of the show. And it was the longest running, first run syndicated show in history. You know, we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the show. This was one of the first national syndicated shows where Black artists had a platform in ways that they didn't on American Bandstand. The legacy is just, continued in terms of, like, him making that way for other shows to follow suit, you know, whether it's In Living Color or what have you, like the Wayans Brothers, you know, like all of these shows that came after it have him to thank for it.
Erica, thank you so much. This was a real pleasure, and I wish that we do like a panel style of just rotating people to talk about their experiences of Soul Train, because I could do this forever.
Yes.
And I really thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you. I could too. So might have to do that.
Erica Blount-Danois is the author of Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show. And now for my final thought. My friends and I, back in the day when Soul Train Lights first hit YouTube, we would often play this game where we would try to imagine which dancing person in a line was a relative or a distant ancestor of ours. And I felt myself kind of floating back to that, trying to imagine if I had some distant family members or if one of my parents lived a secret life where they ended up in a Soul Train line and I never knew, but there they were nonetheless in a low hat or a wide collared shirt. And so I'm going to read an excerpt from my book, A Little Devil in America, Notes in Praise of Black Performance. And this excerpt will kind of bring us to the finish line and back to the idea of ancestry. I never saw my mother dance, and I never really saw my father dance, though I did watch them lean into each other during a ballad by Luther or Miss Patty. I remember them rocking back and forth while being cradled by a slow and sad melody, both of them looking exhausted but joyful. For so long, I watched the Soul Train Line videos, wondering if there was some past version of themselves that had been hidden, if they'd leapt among you, my dearest dancing ancestors, if my father might have been the man in the hat so low that when he bobbed up and down, it looked as if there was only a toothpick protruding from a knowing smile. Or if my mother would emerge as one of the many heaven-high afros from the 70s, jeans pulled up to her waist, twirling easily down the line and trying to contain her cool. I haven't found them in those videos, so I've imagined them. I've imagined all of you, too. I am haunted by your radiance, the man in the ocean blue jumpsuit, drowning in silver, who kicks his legs heavenward during Rick James shouting, "Give it to me, baby." The woman in a pink sweater with a bow and massive white collar swinging her hips and fanning herself with a church fan simultaneously during Michael's "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough." The couple coordinated perfectly, the woman in a white dress decorated with dark crimson flowers and the man in a dark crimson suit and white pants, his cream shirt held together by only one button at the bottom, his whole chest on display, both of them shimmying their shoulders in sync towards Bayero. I play the clips of Soul Train Lines and wonder where these friends and lovers are now. If they are still living somewhere, watching the scenes of their past selves cartwheeling and spinning and popping and locking with perhaps some strangers rooting for them. It feels like those are the moments that make a home inside of a person. Maybe they don't, but I want for that to be the case. For me to point at these archives of what it once was to be Black and a person on television with no real message or no laugh track or no manufactured sitcom family, just a song and a handful of seconds and a line and an outfit that maybe costs too damn much but looks good under the lights. In the name of loneliness, I would watch the Soul Train Line videos. In the name of a very specific dislocation, when I moved to a city or visited a city where I didn't know anyone or didn't see anyone who looked like me, I would watch the Soul Train videos. From a distance, with friends who lived where I did not live, we would sit in silence on the telephone and watch the Soul Train Line videos. And after each of them, we would fall into a spiral of naming each person dancing through, shouting out how you might be related to us if we were so lucky. I have claimed the fantasy of kinship with so many of you, my dear dear cousins from another life. I have watched your leather and your pearls spin down the rhythmic labyrinth of that immaculate nighttime. I have imagined you practicing in your mirrors as I practiced in my mirror before going out to a place that I knew would have the song, the space, and the opportunity for me to once again revel in the sin of not being born with your rhythm. My distant loves, I have imagined you with your arms in whatever closets you had, digging for the most luminescent of outfits. I have imagined you unable to sleep or to work or unable to do anything beyond pray to still be alive and standing on the night where the bodies parted for you and the song was a song you'd woven your body in between the notes of and sometime before. Every time I take to a dance floor and can't keep up, I am looking back and praying you all will open up a path with some unbreakable light at the end. This has been Object of Sound from Sonos. Thank you to our guests this week, Erica Blount-Danois. To hear all the music and the full version of the show, listen on Sonos Radio or find us at mixcloud.com/Sonos. And while you're there, check out some of the other great shows on Sonos, including a new episode of Shiro's Mixtape Memoir with Brandy Clark and a radio hour with composer Adrian Young. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. If you love this show, rate it and share it with your friends. Also, tell us what you like about the show and what you're listening to. This is a communal thing, music discovery. Let us know your thoughts in an email. We're at objectofsound@sonos.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sonos Radio. This show is produced by Work by Work, Scott Newman, Gemma Rose Brown, Babette Thomas, and by me, Hanif Abdurraqib. The show is mixed by Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. Extra gratitude to Joe Dawson and Saida Blount at Sonos. I'm always talking about music online on Instagram and Twitter at Neef Muhammad. Thank you for listening.